Dobrý večer and welcome to the Bohemican Podcast with Pete Coleman and Travis Dow.
Hello and welcome to the Bohemican Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Coleman.
And I'm Travis Dow from the History of the East German Podcast today.
Today, that's right. Well, we got a very special episode today that we're going to do something between several continents today and try to interview one of our new partners on the Bohemian family, so to speak, when it comes with Eastern Europe history and all the great things that come with that. And Travis, we're going to try to make a phone call to a running target that's trained someplace here in Europe.
Let me kind of paint you a picture. So basically, if you were, if you did have a legitimate means of having foreign currency, now there, and many people had illegitimate means of having foreign currency because, the Western currencies, every Czechoslovak and East German and, you know, Russian, Latvian and the Soviet Union knew that, their currency was a soft currency and all the Western currencies were hard currencies. Okay. Just
right.
I mean,
right.
So the Western currencies at that time were backed by gold. They had the gold standards and the Soviet and Eastern Bloc currencies were basically just like, you know, we tell you how much you can, you know, we tell you what the price of bread is and we tell you what your salary is. Who cares how much gold costs? Yeah. You know, are you going to buy gold with your ruples? You know, or your crowns, like, you know, why do you need gold? That's just a whole bunch of other bad questions that so no, you're fine with the soft currency. You get paid in the soft currency. But what if you do want a pair of leather like Elvis boots? What if you want Coca-Cola or Marlboro, or you want the latest Time magazine or just like a National Geographic? All those things were banned, or even just like, you know, a book that was maybe banned, but still available. And, you know, in those, they sold a lot of books there. So, you know, what do you do? And like Christoph said, the main way was the black market. Okay. Because most people did not have a legitimate way, reason for having dollars and pounds. And so when they went to buy bunny, and bunny is what you needed to buy these items legally in the store. If you went to go trade in your Deutschmarks for bunny, they would ask you where you got the Deutschmarks from. Okay. Oh,
absolutely.
And also,
every
if
time.
You now also mind you, tourists came in. Tourists did come to Prague. You know, money, certain amount of money did make its way into tourists' pockets. If you had a reason for it to, you couldn't just say I bumped into a tourist. So exchanging money was strictly illegal. Like whoa. So no, you couldn't just say oh I got you know I changed crowns from a tourist. That was a big no-no. So yeah, you had to have a really good reason. Like I sold this tourist a beer and he paid me in marks. Okay, cool. Here's your bunny. That was a very small percentage of the population. Like, that's right. So if you've been listening to our show, you might have also come across another show, which is called the Eastern Border Podcast by a guy named Christops, who actually lives in Latvia and is, you know, doing this whole thing. So here's the thing. He's on a train, I presume, in Latvia right now. And this show is going to revolve around a communist subject that he might talk about in the future. We don't even know. He doesn't even know what we're talking about. This is totally ad hoc. And we're basically so Skype
Clara,
doesn't
California,
work.
Prague, Czech Republic.
and now Latvia or wherever he is on a train. So I had to add right. Skype credit real quick because somehow he couldn't log into Skype. Now we're going to try to call him. If I can figure out how to do that and join and add him to the call, and then we'll get on to our
technology.
The topic.
Love it.
Hello?
Hey, Christops?
Yes, listen here.
Hey, it works. So, Christops, welcome to the Bohemican podcast. First of all, where are you going? You're in Latvia right now, right?
Yep, I'm going from Riga to Riga right now because I got really sick while doing research for my Chernobyl episode.
And are you sick right now? Because we have some questions for you. How are you feeling?
I am feeling quite terrible, but I can answer your questions.
All right. Well, okay. We won't take up so much of your time. We want you to get better. So we're talking to a somewhat ill Christops on the train in Latvia. Now we have this topic, and we couldn't find a lot of information about it. Okay, the question is, have you heard about, or I mean, do you know about, I guess also in the Soviet Union, but in East Germany and Czechoslovakia, they had these old shops where you could go and buy like Coca-Cola and stereos and, you know, Western products, Marlboro cigarettes. Do you know of those things? Did they have that in the Soviet Union or in Latvia? Communist.
Yeah, you call them Tuzaks, we call them Bony stores. Or just in Latvian, nomenklatūras veikali, because nomenklatūra stores, essentially, because mostly it was associated, because you weren't supposed to have any foreign currency at all, except when you traveled somewhere, very limited amounts, or if right. you were brought in the sea. So there's only people from the nomenklatūra, the higher echelons of the party, were allowed to have some cash on them. They were called the Zdatvon, and they actually had a lot of choices there and a lot of good things in them, much more than the stores.
Have you ever heard stories? Like, give me a list of things that you've heard that you could buy in there. Like, what are some of the examples?
For example, sausage.
Oh, really? I was thinking like Coca-Cola and stereos.
No. God, no, of course not. Those are all black market.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
You see, the basic thing.
So what about publications?
Meat, no oranges.
Okay, no books, no magazines.
It was mostly souvenirs, good quality clothing, and the food, which wasn't anywhere available. Because I don't know how it was in Czech Republic, but over here, really, everything went to the army. So even getting a good slice of meat was extremely hard and difficult.
So if you had bon, if you had the voucher, you would actually spend that on sausage because it was so bad. Because in East Germany, it was like Inta Shop, and in Czechoslovakia, it's Tuzeks. And yeah, like you said, you could only spend foreign currency, or basically, you could only spend boni. Like in Czechoslovakia, you had boni. Like, I mean, yeah, because you couldn't get it, or good clothes. Like in Czech Republic, I mean, of course, there was a huge black market. And East Germany had the nicest ones. They had they were really, and then Czech Republic was maybe second or third. Czechoslovakia had also, you know, a pretty good, so you could buy Coca-Cola. But the Czechs that I spoke to had one Coca-Cola at Christmas. And anything more was way too expensive. You know, and I was like, oh my God, I used to drink a 64-ounce cup at 7-Eleven is 2 liters. I used to drink two of those every day. And Czechs were like, what?
My grandfather managed to do quite well. He was a civil engineer. He grew up, he was born in 1920-something. He's really old now, like 96 or something.
Right, yeah.
So at his time, all this road building, bridge building thing was the most high-tech stuff ever. So he built bridges. So he just basically, when he was 16, he started basically working on the roads and all this civil engineering stuff. He went to university and ended up an engineer. He had been working as an engineer for like 70 years. Now he works at a museum of road building and stuff like that. He's gonna manage to be really important in the Soviet era as well as an engineer. Also, he was a Nazi member, sort of, built bridges for Nazis, too, because he hated the communists a lot.
Oh, interesting, yeah. Yeah, it's more difficult back then.
No, it's like, it was like he, you know, his mom and dad were shot by Stalin, and then the Germans arrived, and he was like, build bridges for us, and we will not shoot you.
Right.
And it was like, okay.
Yeah, no. In that case, you have to choose between the lesser two evils.
He, like, fucked up.
And basically, like I always say, the Russians treated us like dogs, and the Nazis were about 50% human. So,
all right. So tell me more about this. Give me a picture of the black market in the Soviet Union. Like what?
Okay,
because it was actually pretty open. Everybody knew everybody. Everybody knew where you could buy Levi's and Coca-Cola. Right.
And my grandpa, basically, he managed to go to a trip to Japan, the official government trip with civil engineers and all that stuff. And he managed to bring back a single can of Coca-Cola from Japan.
Yeah.
So then they 0.33 liters, the small one.
Right.
So they shared it with the family, like small shots of Coca-Cola. And then they put it on the shelf. And it was like the coolest thing ever because, you know, they had an empty Coke can there. listen to my show, The Olympic Burger. There's a lot about why everyone was freaking out when the Moscow Olympics happened, because for a small amount of time, the Soviets actually licensed Fanta and Coca-Cola and were producing that on their own, which is weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's my episode. But about those black market things, yeah, everyone knew everyone, and it just kind of worked. You weren't allowed to talk about it, but, you know, you went to the port and... Well, even if you didn't know anyone personally, you always knew someone who knew someone. And then, for example, as auto mechanics were extremely rare and that all the spare parts were a deficit, so you, if you were a mechanic, you would go and fix someone's car up and they'd give you a contact. And basically, just ask, hey, do you want these jeans? They're going to cost you 200 rubles.
Yeah.
And then you would got them. It was basically through port, through all the people from there.
Yeah.
But yeah, jeans were extremely, extremely, extremely expensive. Chewing gum was extremely expensive.
Oh, right.
Good quality plastic. Like, basically, even still up to like 95, even when we're independent, good quality plastic bags.
Yes.
They can say with the logo.
There's a Czech movie called, I think it's called Pelishki. You haven't seen that, have you?
I don't know. Maybe I have seen it.
I'll send you a link, and it takes place in the 80s, and they're just, so they get these plastic spoons from Poland, and they're like, and they're like, our socialist brothers, you know, create these fine, or maybe they're from East Germany, and they're, you know, our socialist German brothers, and then they stir their coffee with them, and they all melt, you know, and they're like, aw. And then they get plastic cups, and those are from Poland, and they're like, oh, yes, look at these. They're unbreakable. And someone throws it on the floor and it smashes, you know, and it's just making fun of. They were so happy to get plastic spoons and plastic cups because it was, hard to get. So, yeah, weird, crazy. Like, we think, you know, plastic is the cheapest thing. You know, if you can get wood or metal, it's always better than plastic.
In the U.S., it's like always like, it's like, oh, you plastic. I see how it is.
Vodka comes in glass bottles. Therefore, glass is superior.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Oh, you don't want vodka. It's
whiskey.
Whiskey. Oh, yeah. By the way, talking about vodka being the currency of the Soviet Union, I mentioned that in a few episodes. But the biggest trick is that most of the time, if you didn't have – most of the time, the most expensive thing was like whiskey or cognac or some really good quality alcohol, because those were impossible to get, and what were there were just terrible. So, and wines which you could get from Georgia, which is also part of the Soviet Union, but, you know, Georgia produces wine. Wine goes to party people. No one sees them at all.
Yeah.
So if you could manage to sneak in somehow some good quality whiskey or something, then, for that whiskey, you'd probably, you know, there was this line to buy cars. You had to wait for like 10, if you were a common person, just wait in line for 10 years to buy a car.
That's, actually 10 years is the average in East Germany and Czechoslovakia. That was it. You get on a waiting list and you just wait and wait and wait. And on average, it was 10 years.
Yeah, and if you have a good bottle of whiskey and you knew some right people or some good alcohol, you just give it to them and suddenly you can purchase a car tomorrow.
Yep.
You still have to purchase it, but
yeah. But you may. You get the allow. Yeah, you may purchase it. That's the difference. Yeah.
It's kind of blatant corruption and nepotism everywhere.
Yeah. How was I mean, you were, do you, how old are you? No, you don't really remember the
I was
the
born fall. In 1989.
Okay, yeah, because I mean, I was like 7 years old, and I was too young to understand everything that was happening, but I remember. I mean, I went to East Berlin, and, you know, when I was seven. And that
I went and had an interview about the independence things here for Jordan Harbor's Twilight Histories, because, you know, I'm always up for kind of gigs because, you know, I'm a poor sod, so he hired me to do this thing for them because I'm up for any writing jobs or any job offers that you guys might have because I really don't make much money elsewhere over here. Yeah, so so he paid me for this and I did a really good job for him because I went and had a bunch of interviews with people, actually got the independence
that's
stuff.
That's cool. Yeah, that's cool. I'll have to listen to that episode, actually. That's really cool.
It's in his members area.
Did you have anything else to say about those Bonnie stores?
See, the trick is that, I don't know, they were closed, and if you actually happened to get some of those, like, Bonnie, and you weren't up in the higher echelons, then you would fall under a lot of suspicion. Because you could get them elsewhere, you could get them in the black market.
Even the Bonnie were black market, right?
Yeah.
On the black market, you could pay ruples for Bonnie, probably. Yeah. But it would just be very expensive.
Yeah, but then again, not that you could spend your money on anything useful as well here.
Yeah.
Well, basically, you could buy stuff for money, and if you had, but everyone spent money on, you know, I don't even know what the guys in the black market did with their rubles, but essentially, yeah, all your money, if you you didn't have to pay any bills at all.
Right.
Everyone had a job officially, and everyone just basically you had a money. You were poor. You couldn't buy normal food, good clothes, or anything So you had this stack of rubles just laying there because what the hell would you do with them? So you abused them for bribes in black market.
And because money was different in so many ways. So some people in Czechoslovakia or Czech Republic miss that, like the older generation that were already retired, and the government paid for your retirement. The government paid your rent. The government, you know, milk was like 5 cents and bread was like 50 cents. And, you know, people missed that. So is there still a communist party in parliament in Latvia today?
Definitely not. Not in Latvia.
They were outlawed. The
trick is
the politicians are still there, right? Like in Czech Republic, if I go to the supermarket, I can go see some old high up communist party member. They're still there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
They didn't go to jail. They didn't nothing. Some of them are still in politics.
One of the guys here who was the mayor of Riga, he participated into the August putsch thing where the barricades happened and shit. So he did go to prison for a while. But technically, see, this is weird. This is why a lot of people are very afraid here to see Bernie Sanders elected, because all the socialists who were incidentally Russian, they all just joined the kind of socially democratic socialist party. So for us, left is associated with pro-Russian.
It's really left. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. In Czech Republic, too. So, Czech Republic still does have the Communist Party. And they're fairly successful. And then there's the Social Democrat Party, which is all made up of former communists.
Yeah.
And so our left, the Czechs left is also very left and very pro-Moscow and anti-EU and so forth. And they're strong. They were actually in power for a while. And so technically I lived in a communist state, even though it was a democratic communist state with a free market. But the Communist Party was in power with the socialist one. So.
Wait, I have a quick question real quick, too, regarding...
Are we going to be doing this in the show, by the way?
No. By the way, hey, so, dear listeners, Andrew Pfannkuchen, my editor, our editor, is here on the show. You're officially on the show, Andrew. It's all good. What's your question?
I just had a quick question, because I know in Germany, like in East Germany, there's a lot of what's called, like, DDR nostalgia, where it's like people are nostalgic for the DDR. Like, is there any of that in any of that where you are too, or do you know if it's in Prague?
Is there in Latvia, Christophs? Because in Czech Republic there is, yes, absolutely. Not as much as in Germany, but yeah.
There is some nostalgia, but like I said, it's mostly among our ethnic Russians. Because technically, there are still a bunch of people here who have been living here for 20 years now and still don't even talk Latvian at all, and don't even want to talk Latvian.
Right.
So it's a weird look. It's getting into politics. I'm going to devote an episode on this, but if I'll speak too much, literally, I'm probably it will be dangerous for me to walk around the street, yo.
Oh, that's nuts. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So in Czech Republic is between that and Germany. In Germany, because the West German government took over, all the communists basically first of all left the government, and there was no more communist influence. It was all West German parties. But now, of course, they've kind of come back and there's support. But all the East German, the reason that everything, it happened so fast. Trabant, all the East German sodas, drinks and food were gone overnight. In Czech Republic, they were just privatized. So Škoda, the car brand, you can still buy, but you cannot buy a Trabant. And you can still buy Becherovka and Pilsen beer and Budweis, all those things that were state-owned, communist-owned. You can buy them. They're still alive. Those brands still exist.
Yeah, it's still here. It's still the very same thing. They just got privatized and modernized.
So it's different than Germany, because in Germany they all went away immediately, and then people missed them because they were like, you know, this brand of pick. You know, have you ever seen Goodbye Lenin? It's
of course.
I want Spreewälder pickles because those are the pickles that I'm used to. I want the local Berlin brand, not the one from Cologne or Hamburg. And this nostalgia came because everything was gone. Everything was different overnight. All the Trabants disappeared and people could buy VW Golfs and those things. And whereas in Czech Republic, 20 years later, when I was there, you could still see Škodas, the old Škodas. You could still see the old Russian, what were those called? The Ladas and those
Lada.
Lada and those old cars. They're still there. They're not in Germany. They're gone, long gone. So, yeah, it's different.
It's kind of weird. See, Eastern Europe isn't a monolithic block of things. It's,
yeah, no, huh?
It's actually very complex here. You yeah. know that because you've been, also you know good beer. You have spent some time in Czech Republic and Germany. Our beer is on par with that, really.
Yeah, you
our
guys,
beer is like really
guys,
good here in Latvia.
Yeah, you guys had the same tradition of German brewers.
Yep.
Oh yeah, definitely.
That's this confuses a lot of people. People think that we mostly drink vodka here, which is not true. You know, being ruled over by Germans by German nobility for 700 years. Yeah, we drink beer.
It's not all vodka, actually. So, like, you just said exactly. So, Czech Republic and Latvia and some other countries are more beer than vodka. And Hungary, Slovakia, Moldova, South Ukraine, they all drink more wine. Yeah. Than vodka. So just it doesn't. Yeah, the stereotype. Now, what
if
is
your
true
listeners
is that,
can get their hands on it? I recommend trying Armenian or Georgian wine. It's just excellent.
Okay. Oh, yeah, but Chris Dabbs.
What?
I'd be curious to see what you think of because like you're saying how like beer in the U.S. and Germany is like better than like here. I'd be curious to see what you guys because I'm in America right now. What's happening is I guess the best way to phrase it is a beer renaissance.
Yeah.
Microbreweries and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot of those. We have a lot of them too. But just imagine the fact that a lot of our industrially made beer is just as good as your microbrewery stuff.
Oh my goodness!
That's the thing. So yeah, if I'm totally honest, the best beer I've ever had, probably the best three beers I've ever had, are all three American beers. But they're all from microbreweries, and just the cheapest Czech beer is, yeah, definitely as good as a microbrew lager, if not better. I mean, there's just no comparison. So it depends on what you're comparing, you know.
Good, see, extremely good microbreweries and people, yeah, they can make excellent beer,
and,
of course.
And you know what? Czech Republic also has microbreweries, and the beers that they brew will blow your minds. They're just mostly lagers rather than ales, but all kinds of variety and things that you will not find in America. So,
my favorite. If you're ever gonna come visit, I'm just gonna give you this. There's a beer called from a Latvian microbrewery called Green Shotgun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's 7.2 degrees alcohol.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah,
but you can't really feel it at all because it's essentially like drinking it's an IPA. Indian
yep.
Pale Ale.
Yeah, IPA.
But
yep.
it literally tastes like a pine forest.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best way how to explain the taste. It
I don't know what a
like
pine forest tastes like, but I'm...
The smell. It's essentially, it's like, it smells of forest and feels very refreshing.
Yeah,
and
that piney. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll make sure to come over, whenever I come over to Latvia, I'll make sure to stop by and be like...
Man,
I have a drinking contest with Glenn, by the way, because it was interesting, because when Lesser Butterparts joined the Dark Myths, and then Glenn posted about the alcohol content, and the Dark Myths has increased a lot, and the stuff, and I softly objected to this, because, you know, I'm Soviet. I still was born in the USSR, yo. And then we have to make a drinking contest now, because he thinks his Appalachian mountain thing can beat my Sovietness.
Ooh. That's a great oh my god.
Oh my goodness, this is basically Rocky IV, but with alcohol. And
exactly. Andrew, you're reading my mind. We need to call the New York Times right now. This is Appalachia versus, like, Soviet Union. This is, oh my god, this is the contest of the
freedom,
century.
We're bringing back the Cold War.
Yeah, that's right. It's on. Cold War is back. Oh, dude, that is. Oh, yeah. I wouldn't. I mean, I wonder what the Vegas odds there are because. Yeah, I wouldn't.
I've read about the Appalachian Mountains. It's going to be tough, but I believe I can win this.
Oh, my naive little Latvian friend.
Oh,
you have no idea.
You didn't understand.
So Appalachian, so like, yeah, Everclear, moonshine can be basically pure alcohol. It can be, you know, 99.9. Yeah,
prohibition here as well. Everyone made moonshine or their own wine.
I know, actually. Yep. Actually, there's a lot of parallels. Yeah. Anybody can have their own little still and just start boiling potatoes, and yeah, there you go. It is a similar culture.
I think that you can tell Glenn that we're definitely going to make a special collaboration episode whenever we actually meet and have this drinking contest.
Oh my god, I'll be there with a video camera and a microphone. All right. Anyways, that's all the time we got here. So I'll let Christoph's go. And thanks for being on the show, Christoph's. And for all that don't know, he does a fantastic podcast called The Eastern Border, which is also a Dark Myths member. And yeah, go take a look at that if you want to hear more about Soviet Union and communists at the time, communism and all that stuff. He covers those topics and related topics and does a great job of giving you a picture of what it was like to live in the wrong side of the Iron Curtain. So yeah, thanks for being on the show, Christops, and I hope you'll stop by again soon.
You just made me blush so hard.
All right, you know what? It's not that great. I just it's an okay show. I give it a C-. It's, you know, it's really cool. I've really been enjoying listening to it, and I'm really happy that, I mean, that was a huge gap. Why aren't there more shows about you know, the Eastern Bloc and that whole part of the world? So yeah, no, it's filling a critical void. It's great. And you're actually in Latvia, so you give us that first person account of things that are happening there. So that's, yeah, no, it's great.
Oh man, just thank you. Anyway, it was really glad. It was really nice to talk to you guys, and I really hope we should do this more often, I think.
So these shops did not have windows, save one. There was one single in the whole Eastern world, as far as I know. I don't know about Russia that well, but Czechoslovakia and Eastern Germany only had one shop, and that was in Berlin. There was an Easter shop in the metro station, and that one had a window. And so people could actually look. But overall, just being in these Tuzaks, people did realize what they were missing. You know, they were like, oh, hey, Coca-Cola, why can't I?
And that's the last thing that you wanted people that yes. were craving, especially younger people that were craving Western music, Western periodicals, like magazines for fashion, that were just so close to you beyond the border to West Germany. Sometimes you could smuggle those things in. If it had anything to do with religious nature, you had to smuggle those things in. Anything that had to do with any other type of literature had to be written on a special typewriter so that it couldn't be traced back to underground publishing. So we're not just
even Tuzaks were like limited in what they sold because the communist government only went so far. So a hi-fi stereo, sure. A book on Adam Smith, or you know, something on capitalism, or you know, just the latest car manual. No. Like nothing that's over the top. Too, you know, West. Definitely, probably no religious items even in these Tuzaks. But I don't know. I'd have to go ask somebody. Prague was different. Prague, you actually could buy like crucifixes and books on religion. You could in Prague.
You could. Russia was much stricter. Some of those things, because a lot of the things that you would get at these shops would still spark the same sort of background following by seeing you walk into these shops. Just like Christoph was saying, that the KGB would be monitoring who would be going in and out of these shops as easy prey to follow you, especially if you were a national. Now, here's the thing. Same thing happened here. The secret police that had the connections to the communist government would be very aware of who was visiting and who would be probably taking part in these shops, thinking, like you said, Travis, how would these folks get a hold of their dollars? Are they coming back once a week or twice a week? You really took your privacy and the chance of you getting busted into your own hands by having a jonesing for American cigarette or Coca-Cola. So you probably, if you did it smart, you probably had a network of buddies that, you know, would kind of alternate about who would go in every once in a while, but you're still putting yourself at great risk.
Yes, there are websites. I'm thinking East German now more than Czech, but I'm sure there's, I don't know how open the Czechs are about this, but the Germans really, because East Germany became really a part of West Germany, that's how you should look at it. They were just more open about their communist past because it was all forgotten and there's a new government. Czechs were more weird about it. A lot of the Czechs stayed in government. In Germany, that happened a lot less.
They're still here.
Yeah, and in Germany too. I mean, but a lot less. So the thing is that, yeah, they kind of laughed about it more, and they were much quicker to open up secrets. And you can go to websites, which are just fascinating. It's, I wish I remembered the name, but I you can find it. It's some of these archives of the spy photos, the people that were the Stasi in East Germany's case, of the people that were spying on you and taking pictures, and they wouldn't They wouldn't necessarily arrest you. This was all blackmail. So they would open your drawers and, oh, he's got a, you know, some pornography from West Germany. Click, click. And, oh, he's got, you know, Marlboro cigarettes. And or he's got East German cigarettes, but when you open them up, the actual cigarettes themselves say Marlboro on them. And he's got a, you know, the back of his closet has an Elvis poster or a Beatles poster. And, you know, these kind of things. And they're all kind of hidden in the apartment. And yet they're everywhere because everybody wanted these things. Everybody had something from the West. Everybody had contraband. Everybody was a criminal. That's the thing. I mean, that's why it failed. Even people that towed the party line still, you know, snuck a Marlboro or, you know, Coca-Cola or something, you know, now and then.
Well, this is true. We're talking about, you know, getting, you know, material or some certain things that would be out of reach as far as things that make you happy, as far as you know, Coca-Cola or something you couldn't get someplace else. But on the other aspect of the strengthening, especially after the Prague Spring collapse, things got really tight here in Czech Republic or Czechoslovakia at the time, and you really had big problems with the STB. So what they would do is they would have a camera there and be able to take pictures of especially tourists walking across the bridge. And what I thought was very interesting, you mentioned a publication that has these pictures. There was a book published here a few years ago, and for the life of me, I don't know why I didn't buy it, but I can't find it now. But there were photographs from the old STB that were of people being spied upon in Czechoslovakia at the time.
Yeah.
And
there's another
very,
one.
Very interesting.
There's another website, which I think I brought up before, but it's called some spies spying on spies, spying on spies or something. And it's or spies spying on spies is maybe enough. I don't know. No. Yeah, because it was spies watching spies watching spies. .com maybe if you get lucky, but it is pictures. So East and West played this real cat and mouse game, and both sides knew what was going on, and they knew the other side was listening. So they would, you know, red herrings were, you know, 90% of everything was just a red herring, and so they would stand there on the other side of fences or across from a field, and so there's these pictures of it's a whole website of just a picture of somebody taking a picture of you, of the person taking the picture. And it's spies watching spies watching spies, because it's just a matter of saying, I know you're there, and I know you know I'm here, and I know you're taking my picture, but I'm taking your picture too, and we both know each other is there. You know what I mean?
Yep. And keeping people on arms. You know, this time was just ridiculous.
It's just, but it got crazy, silly. I mean, it's
crazy time.
Yeah. Watch James Bond if you don't know what I'm talking about.
Right, you can watch James Bond movies.
Because those are all historic documentaries. Shut up, Coleman.
Yeah, I know they're great. On a reality basis, a lot of us actually would watch or see pictures in the West and during the 1980s of these very long queues of people in line waiting for the smallest of options in the grocery stores, a piece of bread, a banana or something like that.
Yeah.
And we think, you know, and a lot of people, I remember at the time saying, oh, this is just capitalist rhetoric to, you know, make the Cold War even colder. And people were saying that, but what we didn't realize was it all was true, you know, at the time. And this wasn't a propaganda issue to kind of further a capitalist agenda versus a communist sort of issue. You talk to people here that lived it. Yes, you know, to get a banana, you got a banana or a citrus fruit for Saint Nicholas Day on the 5th of December or 6th of December once a year. And yeah, that was a huge gift to get from your parents.
Yeah, I've actually heard differences between Moravia and Prague. So Prague was pretty metropolitan. Oranges existed, at least around December, okay? And proudly from Cuba, by the way. And whereas like in Brno or Ostrava, it might be a little harder to get one, or maybe more expensive, or maybe better quality, you know, worse quality, that kind of thing. So Latvia, again, like you said, there was a port, but still tough and, you know, still expensive. But yes, it's not like super bleak. Around Christmas, everybody had oranges and bananas, and it's like, well, yeah, that's just
and
totally different.
Anything else beyond Christmas, we're talking the rest of the year. You're talking about queues and lines, and you're talking about, you know, having to struggle with getting a good cut of meat or those type of things. And it was really, really difficult. I had people tell me too, especially like you said, Travis, when you teach English here and you talk to older Czechs that want to dive back into it for business reasons, you get to hear these great stories. And I was a little shy of asking these stories at first, But as I got to know the person, they were more open about telling me, you know, what life was really like. But they never would, you know, they would do it with a sense of humor, a sense of a smile on their face that wasn't out of happiness retelling these stories, but basically that you can almost read their face that they know that you're not going to fully believe it, you know, because you're A, American, and B, you're not of this era where people had to struggle. And I found that an interesting sort of dynamic of listening to their stories about, you know, being careful about getting their child baptized, hey, you know, because someone would find out.
Sorry. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Christoph just mentioned this on Facebook. He's like, so now, in case we were wondering where Christoph was, because I couldn't really understand him. So Travis J. Dow randomly calling me while I'm on a train, ill, going from Ludza to Riga, ? No, that happened, Christophs. You did not have a fever. That actually did happen. Calling to my phone.
He's not done. And he's not. Did it happen?
He's not done. Calling to my phone from USA to answer questions about the special foreign currency only stores in the USSR. Of course, I answered, but the connection was terrible. Lol or LOL. I don't know how to read that out loud. Okay. Hashtag. Oh, there's a hashtag. Pete, wait for it. You love this. You love hashtags. Wait for it. Hashtag only in dark myths. Did I oversell the hashtag? I don't know. But I know you like hashtags. So that's in case you hear typing in the background, I'm just like, I'm just responding to that. So this is all real time, folks. This is happening right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Travis, going back to this again, you know, these things were real. And these people that lived through it here in the Czech Republic, you know, it's a big disconnect because you've got 20-something-year-olds that have no idea about what life was like. Before the time, about how hard it was to do the simplest things, or how special it was to get a fashion magazine from West Germany smuggled into you that you would hide under your bed and make sure no one found out that you had it. You wouldn't tell anybody you had it.
Yeah, there's one more crucial point here. So you could, if you could get Bonnie, basically kind of problem solved. You could walk into the store and all was good. No one would really ask questions at that point. It was the exchange itself, kind of. But the problem was, so towards the later days, the government got more and more lax on how it handled this, and more people had access, especially like in the late 80s, really. Most people probably had seen the inside of a Tuzek. Everybody, maybe. I don't know. And the problem was is that Tuzeks were just way more expensive than stuff was in the West. They upped the price, you know, fivefold sometimes to keep everything rare and to really, you know, get that foreign money. They had a monopoly. Why not? The Soviet government had a monopoly on Coca-Cola and Marlboro. Yeah, you know, they could charge whatever they wanted. And Czechoslovak government, too, and the East German government. So it was a sweet deal for them. And it did really work. They got a lot of foreign currency that way. That's a big way how they got foreign currency from their own populations. Because, you can't tax them. You don't know if they have it. I mean, it's weird. But, yeah, so give them some hi-fi. Hi-fi, like, stereos, and there you go. The problem is that sometimes it was just easier to smuggle stuff. And because it was so expensive, especially like Christoph said in Latvia, maybe less people actually had access to these Tuzeks. And then, you know, they had a port. So if you just had connections, you could get foreign money. You could get, you know, people would bring things. Like people would come with suitcases of Levi's jeans every time they came from West Berlin or from if they ever came from the U.S. especially. But, you know, jeans and boots and shoes and cigarettes and soda and chocolate from Austria or Switzerland and just all kinds of stuff. So really, the black market was 10 times bigger than any sales done at these Tuzeks. But still, the Tuzeks was the way to launder the money. Okay, so now you got foreign currency somehow, through some shady dealings. Okay, so now I can buy Bonnie and launder it and get local currency, get my soft currency that no one will ask questions about. That kind of thing. So it kind of the Tuzeks was like it was like intermingled in the black market. It made the black market worse. It made people want Western things worse. Many people did not know what they were missing until they walked into a Tuzek for the first time. A little tiny corner store with just a couple of little things in it, and they're just minds blown. What? Look at that glossy magazine. Look at that red print on that cigarette pack or that red on that soda. I mean, not to be cliche, like they had colors, don't get me wrong. But if you've seen like communist era packaging. It's just like, it's funny. It's so bland and doesn't really change in the 70s and 80s that much.
Well,
it's just,
yeah, Travis, you know, you turned me on to a great movie from Germany a few years ago. So Travis, you know, you mentioned this before in a movie that you really enjoyed, about a woman that was going into a coma in East Germany. That was a comedy. When she came out of the coma,
oh yeah,
any kind of stress would have set her back or maybe killed goodbye. Her. So her family decided to make paint over the fact that the wall came down and that there was no more communism in Germany. And so that reminds me of this movie.
So yeah. I mean, in Prague and many places, there's like communist museums and you can go see this stuff. But if you don't have access to communist museums, then go watch Goodbye Lenin. It's in German, but I don't know if it's been dubbed, but it's worth it to watch it in subtitles. Just you really see, even, you know, they go to IKEA and get a new kitchen. And I've just seen all this stuff, like old compared to new. They just throw everything out. Everything is just so different. And there's another movie. So that's a German movie. There's a Czech movie called Bonnie a Klid. It's like Bonnie and Clyde, kind of, but it's a play on words. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't seen that.
So okay, so it was made in 1988, and just for that fact, I would say, whoa, what? Go watch it, because we are talking a movie that was made in Czechoslovakia during communist times, making fun of everything we're saying on this episode. Okay, so Bonnie is those bon, the
we're talking
the
about
vouchers,
money, right,
yeah,
the
vouchers
money.
Is probably the correct English word. So you had to go exchange to get vouchers, and Tuzex only took vouchers. So with these guys, and this is so fantastically late 80s, but it's 80s in Czechoslovakia, like we're talking tracksuits, okay, and like total like hoodlum, like Czechoslovak hoodlums, like Nazar ti vole, you know, all like just totally slumming it, but still under communism. And by this time in 88, so this was a huge controversial movie by the communists, because communists were still there. And then the next year it fell and it became popular overseas and all that stuff. But this movie really shows. So 1988, you did have tourist buses coming over from West Germany and other places. And basically these, you know, they would just run up at rest stops on the Autobahn or someplace or on the highway in Czechoslovakia and just run up on these buses and be like, currency, currency, currency. And, you know, try to get as many Deutschmarks as they could and just, sell something. They would have something really cheap for sale, like sandwiches, some water, you know, just anything to get a mark or two, a Deutschmark or two. And because that Deutschmark was gold, you know, oh my goodness. And, you know, then they go and exchange it somehow and get money, and that was their life. And or they would, you know, pass the money on for huge profits, whatever. But they were just, so there's this just one little piece of the chain of the whole black market as a whole. And obviously now when communism collapsed, organized crime filled the void just like magic overnight, especially in Russia. But, you know, the Russian mafia made
all
its way.
Vices.
Yeah. And, made the Russian mafia itself made its way to Czechoslovakia. And, you know,
right.
But
you can see some of these things in today. Right. I mean, downtown in Wichita Square, you can still see there are places there'll be dealers for drugs hard drugs down there after midnight. And there's, of course, red light brothel areas that are not really legal, but
they're there.
The people look the other way.
Right.
Know, authorities
and,
look
and,
the other way.
Yeah. And so even like part of this looking the other way attitude, that all happened in communism times, because a lot of the economy just wouldn't function quite right if, you know, there wasn't a huge black market, you know. People wouldn't get enough shoes. People wouldn't get enough, you know, certain items. Like you might actually get stopped on the street if you're walking around in jeans or whatever. But if they looked old enough, if you had them long enough, maybe like, okay, you know, whatever. But yeah, it's just it was just weird. Just things that we would never think about, things that we'd take for granted as far as freedoms and that kind of thing. Just in a weird way. Now, Bonnie a Klid, that movie really shows that in 1988. It was filmed in the time. So that's why I recommend it so highly. I would say go watch that. There's other, I mean, we've mentioned other Czech movies that were made later that portray communist life, and they're fantastic. But Bonnie a Klid is maybe the first Czech movie I saw, period. Like someone instantly, I think that my same student that told me about Tuzex was like, oh, there's a movie about it. You should go watch it. And I went home and found it and did, you know.
Well, you know, this would be kind of remiss of us not to also mention some of the other pop culture sort of things we kind of touched on a little bit in Czech Republic during the 80s, you know, coming into the Velvet Revolution. And, you know, people still kind of push the envelope. Travis, you're right. You hit the nail right on the head because there were so many external factors coming in and people were feeling it that they started to push the envelope and the authorities weren't pushing back as strong as they were throughout most of the 1970s. You know, groups like Kabat, you know, you still see them every once in a while doing a reunion tour. This was a Czech heavy metal-ish sort of band during the 1980s. And I think one of their bigger hits was Mala Dama, which means Little Lady. I think there were a couple other big hits in there as well for them. And they're treated kind of like rock gods here. Only not maybe so much that the millennials today love that type of music, but more so that these guys did it the hard way, and they did it during the days of communism when everything was on the line for them. And, you know, one of the big things that kind of showed you that the Czechs were ready for Western culture, just salivating for it, was in 1990, I believe it was 1990, when the Rolling Stones came here and played to over 100,000 fans. And it tore the place apart.
That was, that's like almost a revolution right there. I mean, exactly, you know?
Right there, exactly. Yeah. You know, and so people were ready for it. So as we see through the course of the 1990s into the 2000s, and now we're going into closer to the end of the getting closer to 2020. In this case, that we're seeing that people have embraced what the Western stuff now. And if you were to talk to a millennial and say, "Hey, dude, do you know that it was hard to get Coca-Cola as they're going into an IMAX movie theater downtown, or wearing the latest fashion that you'd see in London or New York?" They would look at you with a crazy look in their eyes saying, I think I heard stories about that from my mom. You know, it's just a big, big difference. And it's only been a couple decades since some of these things were very difficult that we're talking about tonight and under communist rule. And, you know, the freedom here is there. But much like many other post-Soviet or satellite countries, they're having that sort of big I don't know, what would you call it, Travis, a sort of issue of freedom is wonderful, but it comes with the other parts of it, which are, you know, maybe the vices that come with it, that if you don't be careful, that you're going to fall into those things. The things that we see in the United States or you see in Canada or in Great Britain. And those are struggles. You know, you have the freedom to make some bad decisions. And, you know, Papa government's not always going to come by and rescue you for your own good. And that's a big part of the evolution that I think the Czechs are going to have to make. They have made in some cases. And I think you've seen that too, you know, Travis, in Germany, that the Eastern Germans had to make some of those decisions as well.
Yeah. I mean, the history kind of differs in many aspects, like from between Latvia and Czechoslovakia and Eastern Germany. Like Latvia was really, and then a couple of years later, Slovakia also, you know, Latvia and Slovakia had to kind of rebuild their whole countries because their whole governments were just run by somebody else, basically. Eastern Germany just became capitalist overnight, like really, really weird stuff. And, you know, Russia, just the mob took over, huge depression. It just all went different ways. But yeah, the schemes around Bonnie at post-communism, I think we should almost, this warrants a whole nother show. The two most wanted men in Czech Republic right now, one may be dead now, and one may be caught. It's been years since I really checked up on the news. But there was these, after communism fell, they just gave everybody a 1,000-crown voucher and said, use this to invest in these now privatized companies. And people just came by and bought them by the boatload and then just would have billions and billions of these vouchers and then, you know, buy a company or do one thing. And then that company, I mean, the profits would just be, so they're billionaires now sitting in the Bahamas, and the Czech Republic is, you know, trying to go after right. extradition treaties. And when they do, these billionaires just kind of move to a smaller island where the Czech Republic does not have an extradition treaty kind of thing. And they're safe. One of them might have been nabbed with U.S. help. I don't remember. One of them might have died, been killed. Because this now happened 20 years ago. So they've been laying openly on the lam. I mean, you know, for decades. And some got rich off of these weird schemes, these loopholes or these, you know, the transition from communism to capitalism. Oh, many got rich on the transition, actually. There are more billionaires in Moscow than any other city, period, per capita or non. It's just crazy.
And others in the Czech Republic just went into politics.
So, absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, they're still there. They're still there.
Before.
In East Germany, they were really shunned, and just the Western parties just took over. And, you know, okay, you're now voting for Western constituents, Western candidates, or Eastern ones that came out of nowhere or that were related to the opposition. Just like, you know, the main Czech party for years and years was from the opposition, and now it's kind of splintering. But it all came from that Charter 77, that pre-Velvet Revolution you know, activity, those underground guys that were known, they served jail time. So the anti-communists thought they were trustworthy and that therefore voted for them. But the communists themselves weren't gone. You know, they were still there. They didn't serve jail time. You see them at the supermarkets. You can see secretaries of state, whatever, you know, parliamentary members in supermarkets in Prague.
That's the thing, Travis. These guys just didn't evaporate, you know, and that's the thing.
Absolutely
that,
not.
You know, they came through the communist deal with the Socialist Party. They were movers and shakers. And they when things went the other direction, they played it down a little bit, and then to the point where they hope that people had short memories, and some people do, and some people do not. And
You
get to see people that are even saying, "Hey, I want to expunge my name. I want to go out there, and I'll have these trials or these sort of, you know, a trial in the open community to prove that I'm not a communist or not a socialist."
Those stories still make the news.
What they do is
if you pick up a Czech newspaper, they still happen every year.
And on top of that, they know the people that are making these decisions in the courts. And of course, they're never going to say they're going to find evidence that they were part of the Communist Party or whatever the case may be.
They get off pretty
loud. And so they won't go scot-free.
In Germany, too, they're like, okay, this and this communist was dealt, you know. They're still finding Nazis, for Pete's sake. Did you hear that there was a guy that was involved in Auschwitz just got – died during the hearing, basically. I mean, it's not dead.
Right.
Communism is much fresher than that. I mean, that's our lifetimes.
You know, it is something that people are concerned about, that the communists could ever come back as a substantial party here in the Czech Republic. And of course, with Big Brother Russia, no one wants me to say that, Big Brother Russia, but, you know, they are kind of a mover and shaker, is still on the continent. And, you know, when they flex their muscles, as we've seen in eastern Ukraine, not a lot happens to them other maybe than some sanctions, you know, because they're a powerful country. And there's a long memory here about what happens when you don't put people in check, so to speak. Don't play on words here. When you put them in place, that they can overextend their boundaries. And I can definitely understand that from a Czech perspective. Okay, so Travis, you know, we talked a lot tonight about communism and its effects here in Czech Republic. We talked about it in Germany, in Latvia, and in some other satellite countries. And you know, it was a time that was difficult for many people. That memory is long for a certain part of the population here in Czech Republic. And in other parts of the population, it's non-existent. And I wonder at one point, what will the final histories write about the time post-World War II all the way through the Velvet Revolution in 1989, about the little things, the things that made living here real.
Crazy.
The shops we talk about.
There is a significant some portion of the population, significant minority, let's say, that miss the good old days, honestly. And they might be dying out because it is mostly an aging demographic. But in future, if they ever plan on being super politically correct and writing the history books, given their current political and just, you know, their current environment in the country, the way that they look at life, I think communism is going to get a more than fair shake. Like, honestly, there's enough people, there's enough nostalgia around it. There's enough already in Czechs in a Nutshell and those kind of like pop history books. You see that already. There's, you know, the good old day when there was nothing better to do but go outside and picnic. You know, that's like, and when milk was 2 crowns, bread was 3 crowns, and rent was 5 crowns, you know, that kind of thing. Like, that's people are just gonna never really forget that aspect too. And it's really hard to say. Like, in America, it's like, oh, politically correct is like, oh, communists? Yeah, no, they're the devil. They're straight Satan. No, that, I think that's fair to say. You know, that would be politically correct.
But in Czech Republic, that's not the case.
And Germans also have a different attitude. Like, Germany is like almost, as the far right is growing, let's say, the far left is also kind of coming back. So it's like Germany, we are living through a time where they're becoming more extremist as a whole, like left and right, you know, the whole Syrian refugees set, you know, kind of set these things off, and people either defend them or, you know, hate foreigners more than ever. And it's just, yeah, it's ugly. But the thing is that these anti-Nazi people are definitely giving, you know, looking at communism, looking back with rose tinted glasses in many, many aspects. Saying, you know, the one thing communists did right was stomp on fascists, you know, that, like, right. So, I mean, there's different ways to look at it. There's different viewpoints, and I'm definitely not going to say anything pro-communist here, but it will be interesting to even in our lifetimes, if I, you know, the Czech historians writing history books, it'll be really interesting to kind of see what they have to say about the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s.
In general, when you get an idea about what life was like then and what it's like now, I think you're right, Trap. People revisit things and they look at it through rose-colored glasses. And you're right, there are people here that are, especially older folks, where the government took care of you completely.
Yeah.
And had, you know, government-assisted housing. And now you're kind of a little
they
bit
they had some
own.
Hard I mean, times, think yeah. About,
yeah, you got today you got to think about saving money for that. I mean, the same things we all concern ourselves in other democracies. That the government is not completely invested in your life, and they look towards. I mean, we see it today. We see people looking towards Finland or Sweden or these places like that, and like, well, you know, cradle to grave, you know, government taking care of you. That's not so bad, right? Well, as time goes on, we're going to realize that these governments can't afford to keep doing this, and so you're going to have a lot of people going back and looking with rose-colored glasses. Even look at in our country, you say, well, people say communist, you think that's the devil. Not so much anymore. The word communist, maybe. Socialist, not so much. You know, people are saying, you know, one of our candidates right now is self-proclaimed socialist in a lot of ways.
Social Democrat.
He would never be a
social Democrat.
Social Democrat. He would never be able to run 30 years ago, period. During the height of the Cold War, never would have happened.
Yeah, no chance.
And now we're having someone that says these things. You know, so, I mean, you know, and we relabel things like, you know, what is once back in the early 20th century was socialist. They renabled themselves progressive.
That's been very, that's been changed a lot. The definition of socialism. Like, here's the thing. If I tell you, all right, Pete, here's the deal. I'm going to make it so that you can buy eggs, bread, cheese, just one type of cheese, one type of bread, eggs,
government cheese,
milk. Well, what's it called? Two types. I'm sorry, my dear Czechs. Two types. Hermeline, and what's the other one? The bland one? The blander? There's bland and blander? Okay, sorry. Sausage. All kinds of different sausage. The really unhealthy kind. Like the bad end of the spectrum sausage. But all you can eat, okay? Fried meats, all just dirt cheap. You can buy all that stuff, including rent, with pocket money. You're probably never going to get a car. You're probably going to maybe not even have a TV, but you'll get a radio. But here's the thing.
Never travel.
Here's the thing. For the rest of your life, Pete Coleman, you can half-ass your job. You can just be Johnny Cut Corners. You can just come in. You got to be there on time. You got to leave. You got to stay till 5. But man, you can practice your pencil twirling. You can build the biggest rubber band ball ever. We're talking, I mean... And where do you work? Because if it's a place like a lumber mill, well, now you know how you're going to get the material for your cottage. You know, you can trade some wood for additional eggs.
You'll take some after hours just to make sure something as a barter.
This is becoming like really derogatory in a way, but the point is like not everybody if you don't like if travel's not your highest priority and you're just more worried about, you know, what am I going to do for retirement or, oh my God, am I going to get fired? No. Well, you're never going to get fired again. You just come in 9 to 5 and just kind of, you know, there's not even computers. So you just look at a piece of paper and doodle or something, get paid, come in, if it's manual labor, most of it was manual labor. If it is, it's like, you know, let's flip 3 boards an hour, take a smoke break, flip another 3 boards. Oh, lunchtime. And lunch involves about 4 to 8 beers. for about, you know, 5 cents a piece. And your boss is with you, so it's all good. You're not going to get fired. So now that actually sounds pretty appealing to some. Like, you know, maybe not the people that end up going to Harvard or, you know, I don't know. Oh, hey, by the way, and university's free. In fact, we'll pay you. We mean room and board and tuition is free. We will pay you to go to university. You can be a doctor. You can be an engineer and, you know, move up the ladder, move to Moscow.
you may not have that choice to be a doctor engineer. The
absolutely not. The catch? No, right. You got to sign here. You got to join the party. Oh, that's it? Oh, no. Where do I sign? No. Wait. If you join the party, that means, oh my goodness, 3 times a week, you got to show up at, you know, this and that rally, this and that meeting. You got to show up in uniform here. You got to show up to this march. It basically sucks up your, it's a daily activity. It sucks up your free time. If you actually just join the party and go with it saying, I'm going to get that promotion. I'm going to be the top engineer for the Russian space program. Well, okay. But, you know, think about, I hope you got a good singing voice because you're going to stand and sing and do the whole communist bit for your whole life. Like that's the downside. But retirement? No, we got that. And oh, milk is going to stay cheap. You know, shoes. You'll need one pair a year, right? And your jacket's
you're
good,
all
right?
These great things around.
No,
around,
I'm only
you know,
mentioning the
life.
Great things. I'm only mentioning the great. Like I'm saying, like well, shoes. You don't actually need socks, right? Socks you can make yourself out of old tea towels. Good. Because yeah, that's part of the deal. Totally.
What about personal
PlayStation?
Life? I mean, personal
what
life
is that?
Also part of that too. Personal
life
also,
is, dude. Personal life is picnics. You know, the Vltava. Once a year, you either go to once in your life, you go to East Germany. You know, you might make it to Slovakia every 2 years, and every 5 years or 10 years to Hungary, once or twice in your life. Maybe you've been to Moscow. Maybe you got. You know, you've been further. Doubt it. I doubt you've been to Moscow actually. No. I mean, it's a drag. You weigh the pros and cons. It's con. That's why, I mean, I'm just painting a tiny piece of the picture. It's just, it was horrible. I mean, it was just hell on earth. What's his face? Yeah. Famous Czech author. Really depressing. Don't read him actually. Not Kafka, the other guy, you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Eternal spotless. What? The joke? Milan Kundera. Go read Milan Kundera. You're just gonna be sad. You're just gonna be sad. It just sucks. Life sucked. But hey, on a sunny day, you go walk on the Vltava and you have your picnic. And Prague is awesome as a city, no matter what. So you know, go to that pub and get that 5 cent beer.
The world was definitely much much smaller for you if you followed the rules and you did those type of things. But you still overlooked. You looked over your shoulder. And you didn't get a chance. You knew that there's something else out there that you didn't have access to.
We hope we gave you, our listeners, some insight to a sliver of life in the communist Czechoslovakia, as well as life behind the Iron Curtain in several satellite nations. There is no real way to paint a complete picture of this era within an hour episode, yet I hope we provided you a starting point for future research into this topic. A special thank you to our Dark Myths podcast collective pal, Chris Stops, and his wildly popular Eastern Border podcast. You can visit his website at theeasternborder.lv. All one word, theeasternborder.lv. Remember, you can also visit bohemican.com for more information on this program or just drop us a line or two. We are also very proud to be named Podcast of the Month of April on the Agora Podcast Network. Jump on over to Agora for all of these great shows that include the history of alchemy and the history of Germany. My co-host Travis Dow would love to have you tune in. So for the aforementioned Mr. Dow, I'm Pete Coleman saying goodnight from Prague.
You have been listening to the Bohemican Podcast with Pete Coleman and Travis Dow. Visit bohemican.com for more information on this episode, other episodes, and much more information about history, traditions, and culture in the Czech Republic. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, and review, and don't forget to rate us. We would love to hear from you. Send comments, ideas, and corrections on our comments page on bohemican.com, or get in touch via Facebook or Twitter. Tune in to our sister podcast, History of Alchemy, which is also on iTunes, or on historyofalchemy.com. Until next time on the Bohemican Podcast, thank you for listening.